From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, new vaccines. The new COVID-19 vaccines will be available by tomorrow. The new vaccine is arriving amid rising cases and hospitalizations related to the virus, particularly within the last 6 weeks. Yesterday, Governor Kathy Hochul implored New Yorkers to get vaccinated. We'll get an update from Karen DeWitt in Albany, as well as an update on the governor's negotiations for a potential special session to deal with New York's migrant crisis. Sisterhood is Power. It's a podcast series developed and produced by Janice Adams, who's with us in the studio today to tell us more. Once Upon a Weekend Book Fair and Book Share Affair is this Saturday. And Dr. C is here with a pop of psychology. That's all coming up, but first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. A hurricane watch is in effect from Stonington, Maine to the U.S.-Canadian border as Hurricane Lee approaches. Daniel Brown, senior hurricane specialist with the National Hurricane Center, says the region could see heavy rainfall and coastal flooding tomorrow night and Saturday.
It should pass West Bermuda later today or tonight, and then the move near but east of the New England coastline as we get into Friday night and Saturday.
The National Hurricane Center says it's a Category 2 storm with a maximum sustained winds of 100 miles per hour. A federal judge in Houston has ruled that a revised version of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, is illegal. The Obama administration program allows unauthorized immigrants brought to the U.S. as children to be given work permits and allowed to stay in the country. The judge did not order an immediate end to the program, but no new applications will be accepted. The Biden administration is expected to appeal the ruling. The number of immigrants in the U.S. is climbing again. NPR's Joel Rose reports the foreign-born population jumped to a new record last year.
There were more than 46 million immigrants in the United States last year. That's according to new estimates from the Census Bureau's American Community Survey. That number is nearly a million more than the prior year. It's not a huge shift in a country as large as the U.S., but demographers say it is a big deal because the growth of the immigrant population had slowed dramatically during the Trump administration and the COVID-19 pandemic. The share of the population that was born outside the U.S. rose for the first time in several years to nearly 14%. Florida, Georgia, and Maryland were among the states that saw the biggest increases. Joel Rose, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks opened higher this morning as the Commerce Department reported a bigger-than-expected jump in retail sales last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 200 points in early trading.
Retail spending rose by 0.6% in August, more than forecasters had expected. Much of that increase came at gas stations, where spending jumped more than 5%. Gasoline prices were up more than 10% last month, though, suggesting drivers actually bought less gasoline but paid more for it. The opposite was true at grocery stores, where spending rose by 0.4%, outpacing last month's food inflation. Spending at restaurants rose 0.3%, just enough to stay even with rising restaurant prices. Spending on furniture and sporting goods was down last month. New claims for unemployment benefits inched up slightly last week as 220,000 people applied for aid. The overall job market remains tight. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
At last check on Wall Street, the Dow is up 195 points. The S&P 500 is up 18 points, and the NASDAQ is up 28 points, or 2.2%. This is NPR News from Washington. A deadline is fast approaching for the three big automakers and the United Auto Workers. The union says it will go on strike unless there's agreement on new contracts by tonight, when the current contracts expire. The union represents roughly 146,000 workers, and the auto industry accounts for about 3% of the U.S. economy. Taiwanese billionaire businessman Terry Goh has picked a well-known actor to be his vice presidential running mate. Goh is running to lead Taiwan as tensions with China heighten and says his business experience in running factories in China will help. NPR's Emily Fang reports.
Life is imitating fiction this year. Terry Goh's new vice presidential candidate will be an actor named Lai Peixiao. She is best known internationally for playing a presidential candidate herself on the fictional Netflix television show Wavemakers. To make things even more surreal, the show Wavemakers is loosely based on an actual presidential campaign from 2016. And the show has already sparked a real-life movement against workplace sexual harassment in Taiwan this year. Go described his new running mate, Lai, as a, quote, spiritual leader who promotes peace through nonviolent communication. Emily Fang, NPR News, Taipei.
Rescue teams in the Libyan city of Derna are searching for people still missing after a huge flash flood Sunday night. The Associated Press reports that at least 5,500 people have died and thousands more are missing and feared dead as a result of Storm Daniel. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing a transformative approach to justice that is community-led, restorative, and racially just. Learn more at publicwelfare.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. With COVID cases on the rise again, Governor Kathy Hochul on Wednesday resumed briefings on the illness. She recommends that everyone get new vaccines, which are aimed at newer versions of the virus, and will be available as early as tomorrow. Karen DeWitt reports.
Hochul says while everyone would like to see COVID in the rearview mirror, the disease is not done with us yet.
Everybody now knows somebody who had COVID recently. I think it was in the back of our, it was in the recesses of our minds for a long time because we weren't exposed to anyone who had it. My daughter had it last week. My son-in-law had it last week. My neighbor had it last week. People in work have had it. Many of my commissioners have had it. So the reality is setting in. So people are actually saying, oh, it's back.
The governor says data shows cases are ticking up and are now running at around 15 people for every 100,000. That's still far lower than the 50 per 100,000 just a year ago and the 300 cases per 100,000 at the end of 2021. But Hochul says it's hard to obtain accurate numbers because testing for COVID has largely become a private matter. People use at-home test kits and stay home for a few days until they feel better, but they don't normally notify their doctors or seek a test from a hospital or health clinic. COVID-related hospitalizations have been increasing since July. State health officials say 60% of all hospitalizations in some regions of the state are due to people having the illness. Hochul says the good news is that a new vaccine aimed at providing immunity to some of the newest variants of the virus will be available in New York as early as Friday. She urges everyone over the age of 6 months to get it.
Make this part of your routine health maintenance every fall, because this is the new normal.
The shot is not a booster version of previous vaccines, but an entirely new vaccine. State Health Commissioner Dr. James McDonald says people should not become complacent if they've already had numerous shots. He says the older booster shots are no longer effective against the current versions of the virus.
People need to look in the mirror and say, how do I protect myself? That's what I'm helping people. The virus changed, now the vaccine has changed. And that's all we're doing here. We're just up to date now. You know, the virus changed. Now the vaccine is up to date. So I'm encouraging people to get it.
And McDonald says a new variant known as BA286, which is not a subvariant of Omicron, but a new genetic mutation of the virus, has so far not been detected in New York. Health officials say if you do come down with COVID, you should consider taking an antiviral medicine like Paxlovid that eases symptoms. Ann Hochul, saying it's not the bad old days, says there are currently no plans to close schools, require masks in public indoor spaces, or mandate vaccinations. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Vaccination remains the best protection against COVID-19-related hospitalization and death. CDC recommends everyone 6 months and older get an updated COVID-19 vaccine to protect against the potentially serious outcomes of COVID-19 illness this fall and winter. To find COVID-19 vaccine locations near you, there's a couple of options. Search vaccines.gov, text your zip code to 438-829 or call 800-232-0233. That information is also at cdc.org.
At that same press conference yesterday, Governor Hochul also took questions and was asked about her statement on Tuesday that the state is considering ways to issue work permits to asylum seekers in a bid to circumvent the long wait for permits at the federal level. The governor opened the door to a potential special session to deal with the migrant crisis, saying she's discussed options with state legislative leaders. Once again, here's Karen DeWitt in Albany.
Hochul said previously that the state is considering issuing its own temporary work permits to circumvent a 180-day federal waiting period before the tens of thousands of asylum seekers who've entered the state are allowed to apply for jobs. Two bills have already been introduced in the state legislature. The governor says she met with leaders of the Senate and Assembly on that and other ideas to ease the crisis, but she says no decision has been made yet.
We talked about if there were to be a session, what would be involved? And we're trying to game out and figure out, you know, what is the objective of that?
She says she also told the leaders, be prepared for some belt tightening in next year's state budget. The governor, a Democrat, also criticized Republicans who lead the House of Representatives and Congress and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy for what she says is a failure to act to create a functioning immigration system in the U.S.
Speaker McCarthy, other than wasting his time pursuing idiotic ideas like impeaching the president based on nothing, ought to bring back the Republicans, of which there are nine from the state of New York, who should be feeling this and hearing about this instead of calling on us to do something.
The governor says immigration is a federal problem that calls for a federal solution. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, the Once Upon a Weekend Book Share Fair. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Josh Gondelman was not too impressed with the idea of official New York City rat tours.
As a New Yorker, I feel like rats, oh, that's the tourist thing. You want a real New York experience, go see the roaches. That's
yeah! I'm Peter Sagal. When you listen to this week's news quiz, don't turn on the lights. We might all scurry away. Join us for the news quiz that observes all kinds of creatures in their natural habitat. That's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Wayne County Public Library has joined forces with SEEDS, Sustainable Energy Education and Development Support, for the Once Upon a Weekend Book Share Fair. It's Saturday at the Wayne County Fairgrounds. Library board member Mickey Yusups is here to tell us all about it. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Tim.
Thanks for being here. So this is the second annual fair where folks can stock up on free books. And tell us about it, and how did this come to be?
It's actually the 12th annual
Book
Share.
I missed the one.
Yeah, it's our second annual. It's the second annual Family Fun Fair that the Wayne County Public Library is sponsoring, which is Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., rain or shine, at the fairgrounds, although the weather looks beautiful. There's a $10 fee for kids ages 2 to 17, but adults are free. That's for the Family Fun Fair. We've got all kinds of things going on there. There's a bounce house, laser tag. There's even a life-size Jenga, mobile zip line. We'll have balloon animals, raffles, food, arts and crafts, animals. Pretty much anything kids are into, they'll find something to do, even if they're teenagers, at the Family Fun Fair this Saturday from 11 to 4 at the fairgrounds.
All right. And the Family Fun Fair is happening then, and the Once Upon a Weekend is sort of part two of this experience. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right.
The
so
free
Once
book
Upon
share.
A Weekend. Right. So Once Upon a Weekend is the two events combined. So it's the Family Fun Fair on Saturday, and then you can also do the book share, which is free to drop off as many books as you like or to pick up as many books as you like. The SEEDS has been doing that for 12 years. It moved up to the fairgrounds a couple of years ago, and we joined in last year Basically, we were looking for something, the Wayne County Public Library was looking for something to replace our wine tasting event that was very popular, that kind of fell out during COVID, and we were looking for something to replace it. It happened to be the same time as the book share, and we decided to all kind of get together and just promote a love of books and libraries all at one time and recycle, which is the really great part about the book share.
Yeah, talk about the recycling aspect of it. It's a great way for folks to you know, put books back where they belong versus a landfill or something like that.
Absolutely. So you can drop off books from 12 to 6 on Thursday. On Thursday, from 9 to 6 on Friday, and then from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Saturday. Then Saturday from, well, basically all day Saturday and Sunday, that's when you can come and pick up books. So if you have a little free library, or your kids just got tired of all the books, or they've read them 1,000 times, come and get some new ones. There's all sorts of books, and whatever isn't picked up and taken by a member of the community or an organization, anybody, churches, anyone's welcome, then those materials are either shipped off to people who can use them or are properly recycled. The real goal here, though, is to rehome all of these wonderful books.
Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, first off, rehoming those books for folks for free. Where, if folks wanted to drop off books at those times, where would they drop them off?
So that would be at the Wayne County Fairgrounds. Anybody who's familiar with the grounds, there's a large red metal building where usually the 4-H and the non-livestock agriculture exhibits are. That's the building where the book share will be. And basically all around that on the grounds on Saturday will be the Fall Family Fun Fair.
That's great. And then it's also, as you said, great to know that if for some reason you can't get some of those books at home at the book share during the fun fair, they will be sent somewhere to find another home.
Correct. Correct. And anything that can't be rehomed for whatever reason, usually it's because of age or condition, those would all be properly recycled rather than dumped into a landfill. So really, this is the best shot you have to make sure your books that you're done with find a good home. If you're going to bring books, all they ask is if you box them up or bag them up, just count them and give them a count when you drop them off, and then they'll sort through them and put them out, and you can come and peruse them on Saturday and Sunday.
Now, do these need to be children's books, or do you accept any type of book?
Pretty much anything.
Okay.
There are some limitations, but it's more not media. This is fully books with pages only. But every kind of book has pages, so any kind of book is pretty much accepted. If you go to onceuponaweekend.org, you can get all the details on both events. There's links to the two sites, so you can get all the details. And everything is in there, you know, what they can and can't accept. But pretty much anything. I mean, it can be, you know, your classic novels that you don't need anymore. Maybe someone in the family passed away and had a lot of books, and some of them you're keeping and others you're not. Box them up, count them, and drop them off at the fairgrounds for Thursday from 12 to 6, Friday from 9 to 6, or Saturday from 9 to 11. And then come and get some books on Saturday and Sunday and stop by the Family Fun Fair.
That's great. Mickey, I think that you're probably a lot of bells going off for people listening, because as people digitize more and, you know, as you said, like you may have inherited things, or you have things you're done with, you're not sure what to do with these things. This is a great way to recycle those and rehome those. So again, onceuponaweekend.org has all the information about the Family Fun Fair and the free book share. And lots going on. This is an exciting weekend over in Honesdale.
Oh, it sure is. We're not the only thing going on. There's lots more. So come on over to Wayne County this weekend.
All right. Mickey Yusuf, the library board member, and does so much more over in Wayne County as well. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You're welcome. Have a great day. Thanks.
Okay, you too. We'll take a break. And when we come back, Dr. C and a pop of psychology. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we're cracking open a cold one with beer historian Teresa McCullough from the Smithsonian. Yes, they have a beer historian as a curator. And then, filmmaker Tinu Diver on Black Women Brewers, and beer and food pairings for fall with Stephanie Grant. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Hey everybody, this is Jeff Loeffler of The Deep End, and you can join me each and every Friday night from 10 to midnight as I explore the deep end of the catalogs of bands maybe you know, maybe you don't know. You'll hear some Rolling Stones, Grateful Dead, Government Mule, right alongside bands like the Electric Peanut Butter Conspiracy, Kula Shaker, and Supergrass. That's The Deep End each and every Friday night from 10 to midnight right here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Thursday, we hear from Dr. C, our own local South Fallsburg psychologist. And today, she's joining us via the phone. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim, and good morning to everybody in our listening audience. Great to be with you.
And thanks for being here. So today, we're talking about something that might be a little heavier than things we've maybe talked about before. We're talking about divorce. Let's talk about what are these emotional connections of divorce, and how does it influence, you know, in terms of psychology?
Well, divorce is a very challenging experience. Even if it's, you know, in your heart and in your head, it's the absolute right thing to do, it still tears you apart. When we go into a marriage, you know, we're making a commitment before God and country and purchasing a license. It's a very big deal. And ending a marriage is emotionally traumatic and takes time to heal. It's like pulling strands of spaghetti apart to disentangle two lives that have been merged together.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting to say it that way and think of it that way, because you, as someone who is involved in a relationship, have wound your spaghetti around the other, and then trying to unravel that can become complex and have a psychological impact. What are some of the impacts of that?
Well, often there's an identity crisis, because you're going from being one of two and sharing a lot of your life together to suddenly being on your own in a way that you may not have experienced for quite a while. And so it's often an identity crisis, which also means there's great opportunity to come to know yourself in a new and more expansive way.
And that's the point I think we're trying to make here, too, is that it helps you understand yourself a little bit better.
Yes, absolutely.
Are there certain personalities that could somehow be predisposed to divorce?
I really don't have an answer for that. You know, I think people go into their relationships hoping for the best. There's always red flags. There's always challenges in a relationship. You put two people together in an intimate situation, and there are going to be challenges. And it really depends upon how each partner is ready to face the challenges and to move into a new way of being with their partner.
And as we talked about the emotional impact on an individual, there are stages of divorce that are sort of similar to stages of grief, right?
Yes. Well, the stages of grief are really a complex of different ways you may experience. They are not a linear set of stages. You have depression, you have sadness, you have denial, you have anger. And we circulate through these different emotions as we adapt our brains and rewire our brains to be a divorced person.
Yeah.
It's a major personality change.
Yeah, what are some things that, you know, obviously you're not going to reveal any patient confidentiality, but what are some things that you advise folks when it comes to divorce, when they come to you and talking about these mental health effects of divorce?
Well, they need time, and not to anticipate that it's going to pass quickly. It's a grieving process, and I think it really takes a couple of years to work through all the details, because you're also not only leaving an old relationship, but you're faced with a new relationship with yourself and a new relationship with your life around you. It might involve in-laws and children's and holidays. It's a complex rearrangement of your life, and it needs to be respected and given time to evolve and find its new place in your life.
And changes after divorce could potentially lead to some stressful situations or long-term stress. What are some ways to manage the stress impacts?
Well, I think you have to really acknowledge that you're going through a grieving process. Grief does not mean you've done something wrong. Often people feel, if I'm feeling so bad, I must have done something wrong. No, you and your partner could not make it together. You know, a successful marriage takes two people. A divorce takes two people. So both of you could not find a way to coexist together, and accepting that loss, that failure, needs time. And it's helpful if you have a professional guiding you through the process and helping you understand the complexities of how it personally impacts you.
And understanding that there is a process to this. This is
absolutely, yes.
You're kind of redefining your life in a way if you're going through this.
You are redefining your life, very much so. It's a yeah.
Dr. C,
so while it might be the right thing to do, it's still a big process to go through.
And Dr. C, anything else you want to make sure folks know when it comes to this topic of a divorce, of this uncoupling,
if you
will?
Please be kind to yourself and give yourself time and lots of support from your friends, from other family members, or from a therapist to get through this.
Well, Dr. C, thank you so much for joining us again this Thursday. We'll see you next week. And as you say, be kind no matter what situation you find yourself in.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Tim. Have a great week, everybody.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Janice Adams is here to talk about Sisterhood is Power, a new podcast and initiative. This is Radio Chatsko.
Support comes from the Women's Health Center in Honesdale, Hamlin, Waymart, Carbondale, and Lords Valley in Pennsylvania. Physicians and certified midwives who deliver. The Women's Health Center is a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center. WMH.org. NACL Theater Highland Lake. Innovative performance and community action. NACL.org. And from listener donations at WJFFradio.org.
Hurleyville Performing Arts Center and the Black Library present Culture Fest, 50 Years of Hip Hop, celebrating a half century of cultural innovation Sunday in Hurleyville, featuring local talent, dance performances, spoken word, art, and musical acts, plus food and local vendors. Culture Fest, 50 Years of Hip Hop, 2 to 7 p.m. Sunday, September 17th, Fireman's Park in Hurleyville. Info at HurleyvilleArtsCenter.org.
Hi, Angela Page from Folk Plus. On the Folk Plus shows that I create, they are lyrically driven and based on a theme. I choose the songs with music that moves my heart and lyrics that engage our minds. Take an intelligent, intimate journey with today's singer-songwriters and join me on Folk Plus, Sundays at 4.
Last night I saw the Horse King when he was in his prime.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Sisterhood is Power podcast is part of a Alzinnia Project initiative created to inspire and empower women across the generations to mentor and empower women and girls across the world. This podcast has been developed and produced by for the Alzinnia Project by Janice Adams, and she's with us in the studio today. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, everybody.
And tell us a little bit more about what is the Alzinnia Project?
Well, you know, it is a project that was launched by a woman named Cynthia Pluche, who was inspired to do so when she learned of her grandmother's quest for an education that took her 27 years to get from high school to getting her bachelor's, but she did it.
Oh, wow.
And that was the thing. And she did it in a segregated America where she's working nights as a cleaning lady and raising her family. And that made Cynthia, who had her own trajectory very successfully on Wall Street and in finance, decide that she wanted to make something. She wanted to turn her donations into philanthropy, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And so she has created this Alzinnia Project, and she asked me to do something that would really look at inspiring and empowering other women and girls. And that is Sisterhood is Power.
So you are obviously the host of the Janice Adams Show here on Radio Catskill at 11 o'clock on Saturdays. This is a separate project. It's the Sisterhood is Power podcast. And you have interviewed people from all over as a way of empowering women to spotlight really rarely featured entrepreneurial women who've made made an impact in the lives of other women and girls.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we speak so often of empowering women, but we don't really ask the question, what are we empowering women and girls to do? You know, how will we do that? And what does it truly mean in the lives of women and girls, other than the fact that it just sounds good and yeah, we need it.
Right.
And we need it.
So this morning we're going to get a preview of some of these episodes of the podcast. Should we start out with episode one?
Yes, we are going to preview clips from episode one this morning. And episode one is Waves of Change.
And you don't see yourself as a trailblazer. You don't see yourself as creating a great legacy or something. But when you look back, you realize you have taken many, many steps. You have made impact on other people's lives. You assess who has impacted your life. And so for me, it was a very interesting time to be on Wall Street and in that environment. But I never lost track of this need to be doing something to help other people or to be involved in a way that was more nourishing of my personal self as opposed to my professional self. I had always been a donor to various organizations. At some point, I wanted to take more control over having more impact for my dollars. Okay, if I give X amount a year anyway to organizations, why don't I find out a way to do the ones that I want to give more focus to? And that was really it. And now what do I focus on? Having more control and having more impact, perhaps. Housing Your Project doesn't go out and one-on-one work with students or young people. We foster, we hope, encourage, and bring awareness to the organizations who are doing just that kind of mentoring that empowers and builds lives in a positive way. A side note is that it's been very interesting being in contact and working with that group because they have in some ways mentored me with my small startup organization. And you know, it's passing it along. And so you're never too old to have a mentor. And mentors can enter your life at any stage, and you just have to kind of be on the lookout for it.
That was Cynthia Plouché, who has founded the Alzinia Project. And this is a clip from Sisterhood is Power podcast, episode one. Janice, I guess I messed up a little bit. It's actually, we're getting clips today from episode one, not all the episodes. So that was the first clip from episode one to kind of preview some of these, great women and some of the great work that they're doing. And this episode, you say, opens with the question, what happens when a woman casts her proverbial pebble into her life stream?
Exactly. What happens indeed? And so what we have here is six women successful in their fields. They wade into an ocean of possibility. We'll keep this metaphor going. Braving waves of change, founding organizations that dare to make a difference, confronting obstacles, unforeseen and not, facing setbacks and urge forwards to release the ripple effect of their pebbles.
And in the second clip, who are we hearing from?
We are hearing from Susan Garcia Treichman. Now, she is absolutely fascinating because, as you will hear in the introduction coming up, this is a woman who, number one, already created a $28 million catering business from scratch, from $300, okay? And then she decides to go back to college because she feels, I don't have a degree, and it totally changes her life. Everyone talks about giving back. We all know we should. Most of us want to. Many even have in some way, but not like this. Polished Pebbles, a Chicago-based...
Okay, I pressed the wrong button there. Sorry, wrong clip. We're going to go back to Susan. It's Susan Garcia Treishman, founder of Kurt's Cafe, as part of the Sisterhood is Power podcast. Here we go.
In a world of the pre-K to prison pipeline, Kurt's Cafe, an Illinois-based company, is determined to put and keep its finger in the dike. In fact, not only was it founded by a woman who built a $28 million company from scratch, more on that later, then founded Kurt's Cafe to help formerly incarcerated youth find hope, home, and livelihoods, more on that too. And most recently, she's even adapted her model into a practicum on community development, Save Small Shops. She's Susan Garcia Treishman.
The Cafe, this started from the restorative justice classes. It was a restorative justice circle for 15 to 18-year-olds. And I ended up going to the prison where our children are put. And I just kept asking them because I couldn't quite figure out why they kept coming back. I'm like, dude, you were let out when I was here 2 weeks ago. What happened? And they would always say they couldn't get a job. And they couldn't because of our society. They couldn't get jobs because they had no job skills. Well, duh. That's actually why I opened Food for Thought, was because I wanted my brothers and sisters with the last name of Garcia to be able to get work experience, because they weren't hiring Garcias for anything but dishwashing. So they couldn't get that without experience. They did not get thrown out of prison with an ID. So that takes forever. They couldn't afford a phone. And that's how people get job references and things like that. They didn't have the clothes to interview in. They didn't have the language to interview with. They didn't have cars to get to a job or a bus pass. I mean, every single thing that to many people would be very easy to achieve, we as a society have blocked that from certain groups of children. And put on top of that, the horrible PTSD and trauma that they live through when we throw them into prison or even on their streets. So they keep coming back in. The Cafe, it was my vision to do something like this, but they wrote the program for me. I put the restaurants where the kids told me to. I did run the entire program based on what four young men who had come out of prison told me to do. It was totally their business plan. They laughed me right out of the room when I showed them my business plan. They're like, yeah, no, never, More colorful words. It was 34 pages, typed in margins. It was, we're not going to pay them, but we're going to feed them three meals a day. And we're going to have these classes on reading and writing and arithmetic. And we're going to start very early in the day so that they don't hang out at night. These very white privilege ideas of how success can happen. I didn't realize a lot of kids ride a train all night and are very, very tired at 7 o'clock in the morning. They're homeless. We kick children out of their homes very, very early. And when they come out of prison with a felony, they can't get into subsidized housing. So we don't accommodate for that. They said, we want a job. And I said, well, you have no skills, but I'm going to teach you the skills. And they're like, well, we want to get paid if we're going to work. So we came up with a stipend idea that we all approved of. They approved of, I approved of. They didn't want reading, writing, and arithmetic. They'd done that. They wanted to learn like about finances, how to buy a car. They wanted to learn about how not to be pissed off all the time. They wanted other things that were not taught in school. I hadn't been ever an African-American or Latino face teenager, so I had to take their lead on everything I did or it would have been a failed program. One of the things that I'm very frustrated with right now is spending all this money researching how the kids are doing after COVID and, you know, the trauma and the suicide rate is up and they're not going outside. Every single thing I hear that we're throwing money at, that's what my kids go through. That's what the Black and brown communities have been going through. And rather than saying they're having a hard time because of COVID, we're saying they're not smart enough to do anything. The way that we explain what children go through in our white children and our African-American and brown children is so insulting. You know, it's like all my kids, they're not smart enough to get jobs. They're smart enough to do anything. They've survived the streets for 15, 16 years. But we don't see that. We didn't throw the money to their tears. We didn't throw the money to what they were afraid of. We throw the money to all the white kids now that they're in trauma. It makes me ill because that is their biggest stumbling block, what they've seen happen in community, what they haven't had. That's their stumbling block. The rest of it, they'll figure out. They're brilliant.
That is a clip from Sisterhood is Power, podcast series developed and produced for the Alzenia Project by Janice Adams, who's with us in the studios today. Of course, she's the host and producer of The Janice Adams Show here on Radio Catskill, Saturdays at 11. Janice, yeah. That was a great conversation. It's a full conversation on the podcast. But Susa Garcia Treichman, founder of Kurt's Cafe, and I really like what she said there at the end.
I love that last line. She says, they'll figure it out. They're brilliant. And how often do you hear that kind of statement made for children, period, but definitely not for Black and brown children?
Well, also coming from the position of just assuming, well, they're brilliant. They'll figure it out. Like, not that there's a challenge or a roadblock that.
No.
No, these children are brilliant.
She's just saying, get out of their way. Stop putting a roadblock in front of everything that they need to do in life and then saying they are at fault. They're not bright enough. No, just get out of the way. They'll figure it out. They're brilliant.
And another person featured in the first episode of the Sisterhood is Power podcast, Kelly Fair, founder of, appropriately enough, Polished Pebbles. We were talking about throwing the pebble into the river and seeing the ripples.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Kelly.
Well, Kelly is interesting because, well, you'll hear it coming up, but her energy is really just something else. And she talks about as a kid of 13 being so excited because she loved Essence magazine coming into her home every month. She'd be the first one to grab it. And she said from 13, she knew that she was going to have a certain kind of business life because she was an Essence lady.
Here she is.
Everyone talks about giving back. We all know we should. Most of us want to. Many even have in some way, but not like this. Polished Pebbles, a Chicago-based mentoring program for girls aged 7 to 17 that since its inception in 2009 has mentored more than 4,000 African-American and Latina girls, provided more than 500 mentors to girls in more than 100 schools. It's even established partnerships with media companies, retailers, health insurers, and others. The founder of Polished Pebbles is Kelly Fair.
Thinking about starting something for girls with mentoring is a direct connection to me because I was a girl who grew up and was mentored. I was really blessed to have women who shared the blueprint of success with me from a very early age. When I think of a pebble or a polished pebble, well, I'll go back to the title of my first book, which is They're All the Same Girl. That's for me at the core. Every girl is the same girl. Now, in Polished Pebbles over the years, we've had programs here throughout the Chicagoland area, Indiana, Texas. And for 4 years, we even had a program at Duke University. So there we are at Duke University working with young women of color who were freshmen and sophomores on the same communication skills that we were working on with girls on the south and the west sides of Chicago. How to introduce yourself with pride with different audiences and different stakeholders and knowing how to maneuver and have effective communication skills. So for me, a pebble is a pebble. They become polished when they agree and find their way to this community of girls and community of women that make this commitment that we're going to work on improving our skills, communication skills, social skills, thinking bigger and better about our futures. But the reality is, for me, every pebble was the same. We just start getting polished when we come together. One of the programs that we have with Polished Pebbles is the Mommy and Me program. And it's an opportunity for moms and daughters to build bonds and build communication and career skills at the same time. So we've had career fairs, we've had virtual career panels, but we have our Mommy and Me business program where moms and daughters over the summer actually build business plans and then pitch them at the end of the summer in our Polished Pebbles Shark Tank. So working hand in hand with my mom, you know, as she was an entrepreneur, my, you know, younger stages definitely kind of provided that model for thinking about Mommy and Me and became an actionable program for me with Polished Pebbles.
And what is so exciting about what she's talking about, she refers to on the show, she refers on the podcast, she refers to a specific Mommy and Me team. Jalen is the daughter's name, who actually, or Milan, excuse me, Milan is the daughter's name, who actually has been the first child to be awarded an Amazon Business Accelerator Fellowship.
Wow.
So it is that successful, and that ripple goes, you know, is going that far.
I really like what she said about mentoring and how important it is, but also how she was talking about in this Mommy and Me group that they have a Shark Tank.
Yes.
They bring this into a sort of contemporary way of mentoring.
Exactly.
Which more people can find perhaps accessible.
And I love Shark Tank, but that is the program that led this girl and her mother to Amazon
award.
And this Amazon Business Accelerator program. So what more can you ask,
right?
I guess, yeah. You know, imaging and encouraging others.
And helping folks make a difference. That's what the podcast is about. That's what the Alzinnia Project is about. We're talking with Janice Adams, host of The Janice Adams Show here on Radio Catskill on Saturdays at 11, about her Sisterhood is Power podcast series, which is developed and produced for the Alzinnia Project. She's with us here, and we're going to take a quick break and hear a little bit more from episode one of the Sisterhood is Power podcast right after this quick break. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Aaron Bendich. Join me for Borscht Beat, the Jewish music show on Radio Catskill. Each week I share rare, forgotten, and classic recordings from Jewish musical traditions across multiple generations, from Yiddish folk songs to instrumental klezmer, Yiddish theater, and contemporary performances. It's a grand tour of many musical landscapes. That's Borscht Beat, an hour of Jewish music in the Catskills, Sunday afternoons at 1 on Radio Catskill.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. We're talking with Janice Adams about her Sisterhood is Power podcast series. It's a series that spotlights a rarely featured entrepreneurial segment, founders of not-for-profit businesses, women whose impact investing, which I guess is a trendy term.
Yes.
That improves the lives of other women and girls through philanthropy and other actionable initiatives. Janice, this is an episode when we're hearing clips from some of these great entrepreneurs and how they're making this impact. This next clip, Mara Cunningham, founder of Rock the Street, really a powerhouse firm and a powerhouse person.
Exactly. Rock the Street, Wall Street. Uh-huh. She's not kidding. Uh-huh. And here's the introduction to that segment. Rock the Street, Wall Street is a powerhouse of a financial and investment literacy program designed to engage and excite high school girls about the M in STEM math, to spark their interest in and take seriously their potential for future careers in finance. Here are just a few of their stats at year 10. 6,000 girls in their high school programs, 1,000 young women soon to enter the workforce, programs in every major city in the United States, 62 high schools in the U.S., in Vancouver and London. Mara Cunningham is founder of the Franklin, Tennessee-based Rock the Street, Wall Street.
The name came from when I had completed my master's thesis on girls and math and how we lose them at age 9 in the United States, some would say earlier, which was around 2012. It was during the Obama administration. And so if you remember Rock the Vote, That was the big thing at the time. So I said, you know what? We need to do more than just rock the boat. We need to rock the street. And then, of course, I needed to say which street. So it was Rock the Street, Wall Street. 10 years ago, I launched this, and we're 10 years in, and we're in three countries. So who knew we would be this well accepted and needed? We're changing two things. I mean, it's not a small thing to do. We are changing cultural norms, and we are changing industrial norms. So we're creating social change and industrial change. And it takes time and effort, but we're doing it. I mean, clearly the fact that we have 62 cities, 62 cohorts, I should say, in 34 cities, and we have interest in over 100 additional cities who want us. And these inquiries that are coming in from students, parents, and women in the profession who say, I want to help. And so clearly this is an issue. And, you know, if you had asked me 10 years ago, if I had thought we would have been this successful, I would have thought not this successful. I mean, I don't want to limit myself, because to me, the sky's the limit. As my mother always told me, the world is your oyster, Moore, go get it. And I took her words at that. The need is there. We're fulfilling that need. We just have to get the general public to understand our need, because the United States as a whole, and the United Kingdom and Canada and other countries, will do well to stop dissuading their female students in their schools. And I have heard from Iranian girls. I have heard from Japanese girls that have been educated in those countries, and they'll tell me what the difference was in their societies versus how it's treated in the United States. And believe it or not, there's actually some better treatment over there in those countries in the STEM professions. How are we changing this? We present the program to a school and we say, do you want to participate in this program? You know, we have a sponsor who's willing to send in volunteers. They'll all be 100% female financial professionals. And so they take one look at it, and probably 98% of the time they'll tell us, yes, we want this program. We then coach the champion teachers on how to recruit the students. But more often, and these girls are self-selecting in, we take freshman through senior, because we want them all. Then the program itself goes a full year. So we have a series of five workshops that are held in the fall, where the professionals go to the high school campus. And then we have a Wall Street Experience field trip where they come to the corporate campus. And it's about a 3 to 4 hour experience. And it's a phenomenal, unbelievable opportunity for these girls to see for the first time the inside of a corporation. Women in power, because what they'll be meeting all day long are women in authority. It's the first time they're seeing women in authority. So that's how they join, as I mentioned. And that's the impact of the field trip, which is the second program. The third program is where we have the girls sign up for the spring mentorship. They have to actively re-enroll with us. And so these are, again, girls who are saying, yep, I want to be mentored by one of these female financial professionals. And that goes on from January through April. And that's a program where they get matched either 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 with a financial professional. And we talk about your resume building. We do job interviewing, job skills, career preparation, what you should be studying in high school, what you should be studying in college, which colleges you may want to look at. So that's the third program. The fourth program is our Alumni and Career Center. So we're democratizing those opportunities now, and it's one of the most heavily visited pages on our website.
And that was Mara Cunningham, founder of Rock the Street. That is a clip from the Sisterhood is Power podcast that Janice Adams has developed and produced in partnership with the Alzinia Project, spotlighting founders of nonprofit businesses to improve the lives of other women and girls through philanthropy and other actionable initiatives. Really admirable entrepreneurs that we've heard from this morning. I can't wait to hear the rest.
Yeah, thank you. You know, in fact, the next time we talk, we're going to talk about some of the stats and trends of women in business and this rarely discussed segment of women in business who actually use their entrepreneurial skills to go into nonprofit.
And where can folks find the Sisterhood is Power podcast?
It has not yet dropped.
Okay.
So this really
is
a preview. Yes. You know, but the Alzina Project, if you go to alzinaproject.org, and Alzina is spelled Alzenia project.org, right on the homepage, you'll see the Sisterhood is Power Project.
And you can follow along to find out when that's going to
Yes, and exactly. And one thing, you know, Cynthia Pluche, as I said, she is the founder of the Alzina Project. Alzina was her grandmother, so that's who it's named for. But she, when we were talking about this, she said, you know, I just want to see all the pieces of this come together and make it glorious. And so this season, with these six women, we are calling the season Do Something Glorious. Mm.
And, of course, the Janice Adams Show is up on Saturday at 11 here on Radio Catskill. This Saturday, remembering one of the nation's darkest chapters in civil rights history, it's the anniversary of the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, on September 15th, 1963. The Ku Klux Klan bombed that downtown church, killing four black girls and, of course, rocking the conscience of the entire country. You're talking to a survivor of that?
Yes. One of the little girls who, or they were like 11 years old, so they were young, who were in the basement of the church. They were just excited and giddy and getting ready for Sunday school, and they were in the ladies' room down there when the bomb went off, and one survived. And she is our guest on the show. She has a book called The Fifth Little Girl, the four little girls we are accustomed to hearing about. But she was the fifth little girl, and she survived, but narrowly. You know, we the last time I was in, and thank you for having me, we talked about the March on Washington, it being the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington, 1963. But 1963 was one devil of a year.
That was a big year.
It was like 68 later on, but everything, every time you turned around, something else was happening. Something rocking the boat, sometimes for the better, as with the March on Washington, but mostly not so. Before the March on Washington, there was the assassination of the civil rights leader Medgar Evers in Mississippi. Then we have the March on Washington. Then in September, we have this 16th Street church bombing, and also another little boy who was killed that same day for the same racist reasons. And then November, you have the assassination of President Kennedy. It just never stopped.
And then this week, bringing it all back, really, the ex-Secret Service agent is now revealing some details of that JFK assassination, which brings back that entire experience, brings back that entire tumultuous year, as you're talking about. But you're going to be able to focus on this one aspect of the survivor of the 16th Street bombing. Is that Sarah Collins?
Sarah
Randolph?
Rudolph. Rudolph. Yes. Yes.
And her resilience and her remembrance of that time and that day.
Mm-hmm. What she went through, but, you know, she, iconic of so many who were just trying to live their lives, and this terrorism. And I think it's even more important, not just because this is the anniversary, but because of the willingness of some people in our society to think of this kind of terrorism as a good idea all over again, and for the same ridiculous reasons. So we really do need to not say that we're looking back to remembering, but looking forward to learn from it so that we can see what we can do to avert another 63 bang, bang, bang every time we turned around.
That's the Janice Adams Show, Saturday at 11 here on Radio Catskill. Janice, thank you so much for joining us this morning with your preview of the Sisterhood is Power podcast. And we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you.
And we'll listen in on Saturday. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. You can find the show and other shows that you may have missed at our website, wjffradio.org. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from the Creek House Grill. Fresh food, drinks, and cocktails on the Delaware River in Calicoon, New York. Menu and hours at thecreekhousegrill.com. From the Forestburg Playhouse. Live entertainment in the Sullivan Catskills since 1947. With musicals, plays, cabaret, arts education, concerts, special events, and more. Tickets at fbplayhouse.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Saturday, Ballads and Banjos will be music about traveling. We'll go to Greece, Russia, Scandinavia, Portugal. Please tune in. Ballads and Banjos on Radio Catskill, Saturday, 7 to 8 a.m.